Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Listen Now, the podcast where we go through the most important and rockin'est albums of all time. This season we're focusing on albums from the 1980s. I'm your host, Matt Stewart. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Sam Tonkin. Welcome, Sam.
Hello, hello. So good to see you IRL in real life.
Yes. It's been a pretty wild year, 2020. So we were doing these weekly when we started, and then COVID-19 came along and made things a bit trickier. And we hit all sorts of issues behind the scenes.
There was many, many issues.
The last episode we recorded 3 or 4 times before we finally got it out. But it is good to be able to do it back in the studio. And, yeah, I'm pretty confident this will be a one-and-done type scenario.
I hope so, because doing it 3 times like last time was painful.
It was, yeah. It was funny, like having the same conversation in parts, like sort of pretending it was for the first time. Yes. Yeah, it was like a fever dream.
Yeah, it was a really annoying Groundhog Day of just like, here's a letter that we haven't read yet before ever.
I'm glad it was an album that we both really liked.
Yeah,
which most of them have been to some extent, I suppose.
Yeah.
This week we're talking about the Smiths' 1985 album, Meet His Murder, which was voted as the 13th most popular 80s rock album by our listeners. If you want to know what next week's album is, listen all the way to the end. After the outro, I'll give you some sort of cryptic clue. It won't be cryptic. I've just been telling people the first lyric of the album so they can look it up if they want to.
Love it.
What was your relationship with the Smiths growing up, Sam?
I honestly don't even think I heard of them until I was in my late teens.
Yeah, right.
I'd heard the name Morrissey before. It didn't mean anything to me. And then someone told me it was the theme song for Charmed. I'm like, I know that song, but that's a cover of their song, so I didn't know.
Is that a cover? I always assumed that was the original, but yeah, I can't picture it now.
I'm pretty sure it's a cover.
Yeah, right. Mm. No, I
we're all
that.
About accurate facts.
Accurate facts, not inaccurate facts.
Not alternative facts, as He Who Shall Not Be Named calls them. But basically I had...
Voldemort.
Sorry, what? Voldemort.
Voldemort. Voldemort. The guy Voldemort. From the Harry Potter guy.
I mean, basically, yeah. But yeah, I no relationship pretty much at all.
I reckon I'm not too far off. That would have been one of the first songs of theirs I would have heard. And yeah. I didn't even really watch Charmed. But
no, I didn't watch Charmed. I just knew it because it would come on after some TV
I have a feeling
show.
It is the original, but I couldn't tell you that for sure. But I think I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page for the Charmed soundtrack.
Great website if you haven't heard of that
It opens with a Smash Mouth song called Hot, which I haven't heard of.
Amazing.
Jeez, a lot of
Smash
bands.
Mouth.
Bands from back in the day. Third Eyed Blind, Gold Frap, Stereophonics.
Oh, wow.
Vanessa Carlton.
1,000 Miles?
Rinse.
Unfamiliar.
It's got the Flaming Lips' Do You Realize.
Great song.
But it is, you're right, is Love Split Love play How Soon Is Now.
Is that on the list of shite band names? Because that
that's a long list.
That's it is, and it only grows every day.
But yeah, okay. So I remember the first time really being aware of them. I was dating an English woman at uni, and she was some sort of a fan, or she found Morrissey very funny. She used to impersonate him a bit. I can't fully remember, but she talked about him a lot.
Like funny, haha, or funny because he was a interesting
No, human. I think just funny, just an odd human.
Gotcha.
You know,
gotcha,
funny, gotcha. Like she found him amusing.
Yes.
in general?
Because I've watched some clips and he's a dry man.
Okay, yeah, I don't think she found him hilarious, but she found him hilarious. The idea of him. What were their big hits? So they.
I don't know. That's
none
the
of
thing.
Them are on this album.
I didn't
recognize any of their songs. Not, on this
and
album.
this is the first album I think that we've done that I recognized nothing.
There is a light that never goes out. That's the song I knew. This Charming Man and How Soon Is Now. They're the three most played on Spotify, and they're also the three that I knew before listening to this album. Do you want to hear some of them?
Yeah, give us a little clip of them, and I will see if I actually recognize them.
Okay. Well, firstly, How Soon Is Now is the Charmed one.
Yeah. Which is great. I was reading an article, the guitarist, I can't remember his name, is it Johnny Marr?
Johnny Marr, yeah.
They ask him how he made this noise at the start, and he explained like how they were dubbing it and all that, but that sliding noise, he can't remember how he did it.
Ah.
And he's like, it's the absolute bane of my existence, and I regret not writing it down every single day of my life.
That's so funny. There's a Grinder Man song called Heathen Child, and it's a similar thing where Warren Ellis can't remember how he made the sound. It's this cool, chunky guitar sound that I think is played in reverse or something, and they're not really sure how he did it. I think that's a true story. But yeah, this is a cool song.
Mm-hmm. How can you say? Oh, it's so good to be able to sing along in time, knowing that you don't have to
sync it. I was having to sync it up later with Sam's.
Yeah, it was. You had to sync my recording with your recording, and then the music over the top of all of it. Not ideal.
So that's
hence the accidental, lengthy break.
That is a great guitar sound. That's the third most played on Spotify. Second most played is This Charming Man. There's a boppier bit of fun, sort of.
I think I do know this one. I can turn it up a little bit. This, like, their music literally sounds like an English beach. Like, yeah. The music is really beachy, but then you have, like, the most English noise come over the top of it.
You picture Morrissey on the beach?
Yeah,
tan?
Head to toe in black.
You're right.
And Sonny's. He's sun smart. But he's just, like, standing there looking at the beach. Somehow everything's in black and white. I don't know. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just it's a kind of music that I've just never really given it a great chance. It's a while away from what I naturally like to listen to.
Yeah.
But the more I listen to it, the more I'm getting it more and more. But this song I've liked for quite a while.
Yeah, okay.
It's just a bit of fun. And then the most played one is There's a Light That Never Goes Out. And I think I first heard this when it was like a version on a Triple J.
It's
cool. Triple J in Australia. It's like the youth radio station and it...
youth radio station.
That's what they call it, isn't it?
I know, but that just made you sound so old.
Well, I am so old. And they would get a band in to cover a song every Friday, I think.
Yeah.
And they still do. And, I can't remember who it was, but I'm pretty sure this was one of those. This is cracking tunes, I reckon. Sort of.
Matt's having a little dance along in the studio.
Well, this is what my ex-girlfriend used to. She, whenever a Morrissey song came on, she just sort of flutter her hands in the air.
Flutter your hands in the air like you just don't care.
I found it funny. I never really understood it, but I guess that's how he dances or something.
I don't know. Does he dance? I picture Morrissey as comfortable dancing as he would be on the beach. I don't know if I know this one.
Well, yeah, it changes a bit in the chorus. Let's get
I feel like singing along to The Smiths is like singing along to...
Driving in
yeah, like Blink 182. Like, you have to put the voice on. Accurate.
This bit is where it changes up a bit. You might recognise.
And if a double-decker bus crashes into us...
I'm filming this.
to die by your side, as to have anywhere to die. And if it's Anton Park, that's the birth of love.
I'll post that cheeky clip on our socials later this week.
Yeah, anyway, so it's...
But it's fun, though. It's like...
Yeah, no, there's something about it. I don't know. It's weird. It's really gloomy and sad sounding.
Like, that's what I mean. Standing on a beach, but, like, sad.
Yeah, I don't...
English.
Yeah.
English beach.
I feel it does feel very pebbles. English, doesn't it?
Pebbles, not sand.
Yeah. yeah, what do they call it? What do they call those beaches?
Pebble Beach.
Oh, okay.
Is that a...
That's a golf course in America, I think. Pebble Beach. Well, there's a word
Pebble
for it. Doesn't
beach,
matter.
Far away inside.
Do we always
Pebble
get
beach.
So easily distracted?
Yes.
What do they call pebble beaches?
I really hope it's pebble beaches
in England.
Are they only pebble beaches over there, or is do they have? If you're from England, who's our English listeners? Paul Mellor, get back to us.
Wow, that's a very Shingle Beach.
Shingle Beach. Isn't shingles like adult chicken pox?
Yes. That's where you get them from. English beaches. Shingle Beach.
Excellent. Again, with the alternative facts.
Tune
in for our news update
about?
Later. I don't know. The Smiths.
Oh, yes. The Smiths.
Sad beaches.
So, yeah. So we both had not a lot to do with them growing up.
Not a whole lot.
Yeah. Only sort of in my adult life have I started to know them a little bit.
Mm.
Good friend Dave Warnicky, who I do another podcast.
Might have heard
with,
of him.
Do go on. He is a big fan.
Is he?
One of his favourite bands. We heard from him about The Clash, who is another one of his favourite bands.
Yeah. Oh. Dang. Did he vote for all of these albums?
Yeah, these are definitely... He. When I told him it was coming up, he's like, you've got very cool listeners.
Good shout out.
I messaged him to see if he wanted to call in and have a chat about it. He said, sorry, mate, I'm at IKEA. People everywhere. I'll ask him, I'll say any brief review for me to pass on.
And if you're out and about at IKEA, people, make sure you wash your hands. Make sure you wear a mask. We're trying to get through this bullshit. Also, RIP to South Australia. Sorry, guys.
That's all done. That'll be done by the time this episode comes out.
Probably.
Sunday it's cut again.
That's a killer. Like,
anyway, I mean, this podcast is forever, Sam. Stop dating it to this moment
sorry.
In time, which will be out of date by the time it comes out in a day and a half.
Oh, you just dated it now.
Damn it.
Oh, fuck.
So did you were putting together some bios this season. What have you done a bit of research into the Smiths?
The Smith Hayes. They like usually there's a lot of like cool stories behind like the way bands meet and stuff, but I don't know. This was like a pretty average two people met. And now they're in a band.
Are they the two key members?
Yeah, so Morrissey.
What's Morrissey's full name?
Oh, I had it here just before. And he, like, refuses. He made the decision, like, before they were even releasing albums that he would only be known by his surname.
So that is his surname, right?
His surname. His actual name
it's gotta
is...
It's got to be Greg. I bet it's Greg.
Oh, that's a great dog name. Stephen Patrick Morrissey.
Stephen Patrick Morrissey, yeah.
Known mononymously, yeah, I said that right, as Morrissey. Other mononymous names?
Me.
Cher.
Matt.
Madonna. I think you're Matt Stewart, or is that one word?
That's one word.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, and he, like, refuses to be referred to as anything else, although the guitarist, what's his name? Johnny Marr, in the early days used to call him Moz or Mozza. Which he also hated.
you still hear people refer to him as Moz, probably pejoratively. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I was at a music festival in Austin, Texas in 2013 called Fun Festival.
Cool.
And Johnny Marr played at it. And I'd still, I mean, if I was there now, I would have gone and seen him, but I I just didn't have the interest and didn't really know it was a big deal or whatever.
No.
But I was in the comedy tent and Patton Oswalt was on. I'm pretty sure it was Patton Oswalt. And then Johnny Marr started bleeding in through the tent.
Yeah.
And Patton Oswalt was like, whoa, that's Johnny Marr now. He's here at this festival playing lot. He said, what are you doing watching me? Go watch Johnny Marr. He couldn't believe it. And then he was like, all right, if you those of you staying, I'll do some comedy, but... Honestly, if I was you, I'd go see Johnny Marr.
And then, so
you
know, good.
10 minutes would pass or something and he'd hear an opening riff to a Smith song. He's like, oh my God, he's playing Smith's songs? Well, honestly, get up and go there now.
What a ledge.
He was so annoyed by us watching him. And looking back, I'm like, I probably should have done what he said. But
he's cool, though. I like him.
He's a
nice fellow.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, look, it's... Sitting in a tent watching all these big-name American comedians was kind of fun as well.
Not bad. Not bad. So they're from the English. We know that. From Stretford, which is part of... I think they're from, like, Manchester.
Yeah,
that's general,
right.
General area, but that's quite a large area I have recently learnt.
Dave and I and Jess, when we're on tour for Do Go On, maybe last year.
Yeah, was it a year ago now? I think I saw you guys posting.
We went twice. It was actually the first tour, so a couple of years ago. And we did a show in Manchester. And then, because Dave is a big fan, he recognised all these Smiths, like, places of interest.
Oh, really?
And one of them was the, I want to say it wrong, was a lads club. Anyway,
a lads club.
And they one of the album covers was... taken out the Salford Lads Club, and so we were standing at the front to get a photo there, and it's from the cover of The Queen Is Dead, which I think is one of their big albums.
Yes,
and so the album covers out the front of the Salford Lads Club, and we were out there getting a photo, and then this old fella popped out and he said, "Oh, you're Smiths fans, are you?" And Dave's like, "Yeah, I am." And so he brought us in, he gave us the tour, and he There was a Smith's room in there. We bought T-shirts and, yeah, it was real fun. Yeah, it was a cool time.
Cute.
We signed the wall. You could sign, I think he had a little camera. He took a photo and then you'd sign your photo or something. Maybe we just signed the wall.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Sign the wall.
Bit
Love
of bloody
it.
Fun.
Cool.
I'll give one of those photos to you to post.
Yep. I just wrote myself a note. About it.
Nice. Anyway, you're telling us about the Smiths and how they came up in Manchester.
In 1978, Morrissey was 19 and was introduced to the 14-year-old Johnny Marr.
1978, the same year that Cold Chisel formed, Oil formed.
What a year.
Amazing.
Except that they didn't form that year.
Oh, okay.
They just met that year.
Jeez, it's a big year in rock.
At a Patti Smith gig. Held it, Manchester.
Nice one.
Apollo Theatre. But it wasn't until 1982 that Johnny Marr decided that he wanted to start a new band. I think he'd been clicking around in some stuff. Went to Morrissey's house and was like, hey, mate, you want to be in a band with me? And Morrissey was like, yes. And then they went through a whole bunch of bassists maybe in the early days where they couldn't I think Johnny Marr and Morrissey were very much like the leads of the band in terms of like musical direction, styling, but also a lot of the business decisions and
right.
a lot of their ex staff members didn't like that, so it was a bit of a tension.
Right.
Their first public performance was in October of 1982 as a support act for Blue Rondo a la Turk. An early 80s British musical ensemble whose music featured elements of salsa, pop, and cool jazz. That is interesting. And then... it wasn't until 1983, I think it was, that they released their first single. And again, it was a kind of decision that Johnny Marr and Morrissey made. So the band was like, we've got a single out. Oh, cool. They signed the contract for a rehearsal space. They signed a contract for a record label. Just the two of them signed it on behalf of the rest of the band. So a lot of discussion about, like, you know, pay, for example, wasn't kind of brought up with a lot of it. Which is why the Smiths only ended up being together for about 5 years, which I also only learnt this week.
I just realised that this week too, that that was such a brief period.
But they released like 4 albums in that time, I think.
Yeah.
Which is pretty intense.
What we're finding is just how they did it back then. It was every year were released.
Rihanna did that. Rihanna. She released like 9 albums in 9 years and then she took a break.
Yeah, right.
And that, you know what? Well deserved. She also released a very successful beauty line called Fenty.
Okay.
Fun fact.
We're not here to learn about Rihanna. If you want to do that, listen to the Do Go On episode about Rihanna.
Oh, did you do a Rihanna episode?
Yeah.
Sick. I'll listen to that later. Because I would like to learn about Rihanna.
Well, you should. You should listen to that episode.
Listen now.
King Gizzard just released a new album today. They released more
Yeah, they release like every 2 months just about.
Yeah, they're freaks.
That's cool though.
I like this guy, Daniel Romero. He is the same, just at least one a year.
Wow.
Often more. Yeah, you wonder how bands can do that.
A lot of creative talent. A lot of inspiration.
Mm.
So their first album was self-titled. Went to number 2 on the UK album charts, which was pretty cool. Had a lot of controversy with some suggestive lyrics that were claimed to be about supporting pedophilia, which the band strongly denied and was like, it's not even about children, you dickhead.
Oh, no.
But that obviously made it a bit more... A bit harder for them to kind of keep popularity when parents are like, oh.
The pedo band.
Yeah, the pedo band.
So it's Daniel Romano. I said Romero. Different person. Daniel Romero might have been a Western Bulldogs player in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Any good?
No, that was Jose Romero.
Oh, my God.
Forget about it. Let's move on.
Can you put them in a Venn diagram of how their names cross over, please?
Okay.
Just a thought. And then so Meat is Murder, which is today's episode, is their second album, which they released in 1985. It was a significantly more political album with including a pro-vegetarian title track, Meat is Murder, obviously. Morrissey's actually been a veggie since he was 11, I think I saw, and then within the last 15 years announced that he was vegan. So that's some pretty strong decisions that he's made, and he's managed to stick to it, which is pretty impressive.
Decisions. Who's not vegan these days? Come on, Morrissey, it's a hack move. Eat some meat, that'd be badass.
Go to McDonald's, you idiot. And Meat is Murder was a very, very, very successful album. It's been ranked by Rolling Stone numerous times as one of the greatest albums ever. It's frequently added into lists about one of those albums you must hear before you die, which I can now tick off because I definitely would have
ready to
listened
die.
To it. Yeah.
After listening to this album, I'm ready to die.
Yeah.
In fact, during listening to it. Nah, good on them. It was a pretty good album. It would have been, probably was pretty, it would have been quite political back in the 80s to be going like vegetarian stuff.
Yep.
It would be very uncontroversial now if someone released.
Yeah, people are like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
McDonald's do vegan burgers.
Yeah, no one's asking about your diet, bro. No one cares. I drink soy milk now. Well, good for fucking you. I drink oat milk now, actually.
Oat milk's good. I like oat milk.
And it's the least harmful to the environment.
Is that true?
Which I'm, you know.
Oh, here we go, Sam, banging on about it. I had oat milk on my oats this morning. Am I?
It's like having egg and chicken in a sandwich.
Yeah,
is this all right? Okay.
Is this ethically okay to have oat milk on oats?
Yeah, oat on oats. Oat on oat on oat.
It's like eating chicken nuggets drenched in the blood of chicken. Is that what it's like? Oat milk is basically oat blood. If you think about it.
That's gross. Is it like eating a sandwich while drinking a beer? Because that's both wheat products.
Oh, my God. That'd be hard.
Nailed it.
Very hard to do.
It'd be smushy. Well, I'm not keen for that.
No.
The cover art from the album is a 1967 photograph of an American Marine, Corporal Michael Nguyen, which was taken in Vietnam. The wording on his helmet was actually "Make War, Not Love," but they changed it to "Meet His Murder" for the album cover.
"Make War, Not Love" is pretty fun.
Yeah. great idea.
What a good name for the album.
"Make War, Not Love."
"Make War, Not Love."
"Fuck your peace, you hippie." And yeah, then Morrissey just kind of, in their growing popularity, gained a lot more attention because of his strong political stances on a lot of things. Hated Margaret Thatcher. Hated the monarchy. I say hated, I mean hate. He's still alive. And was very happy to throw his opinion out in any interview. You know, they'd be like, "How's your new album?" And he would bring up his political stance on just about everything in that interview. Like, he is a very strongly opinionated man, and he was very happy to let the world know about it.
How do you know Morrissey hates Thatcher? Don't worry, he'll tell you.
Zing. Yeah, and then, yeah, so we're at Meet Is Murder. Should we...
Yeah, well, I found an article because I wanted to find a positive review, which isn't too hard for any of these classic albums, but I think I accidentally was reading out one that was kind of bitchy recently.
Yeah, that's right. Was that for the Hughie? Was that for the Hughie album?
I might have
been
for Hughie. Jeez.
You were like, poor Hughie.
Some dogs.
He's managed to get into every episode since, though.
Oh,
good for him.
He's our patron saint of the 80s.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to do some shit Photoshop of that.
Hughie.
Note to self.
So I found an article, this is from 2011, by Catherine Viner on TheGuardian.com. "My favorite album, Meet Is Murder by The Smiths." So they were doing a series where their writers would all do an article about their favorite album, and this is what Catherine wrote. I'll read as much of it before you get bored. Said, It would be easy to be appalled by the Smiths if you came across them now. There is Morrissey's tendency for unpleasant little Englander outbursts, his laddie gang of followers, suede-headed meatheads with football terrace chants, and worst of all, David Cameron's repeated claim that they're one of his favourite bands.
Which
Cameron
they
would have been the Prime Minister at the time.
They hate Morrissey was very against him when he was in power too.
Oh, right.
So that probably killed him that he's like... I don't know who that would have hurt more, actually. Morrissey knowing that David Cameron likes his music or David Cameron knowing that Morrissey hates him?
I imagine David Cameron must have probably guessed at that. I didn't realise. So Morrissey's... I wouldn't have been surprised if you said he was a big Queen lover somehow, but he's obviously... I mean, he had an album called The Queen Is Dead and...
I mean, that would hint to me otherwise.
But people say he's very controversial, right? His opinions. I don't know how. I haven't paid any attention to how, but... I was wondering, I wouldn't have been surprised by anything. I think he has contradictory thoughts on stuff maybe.
And he's had comments that have been more on the racist or, I think racism's probably his.
Right.
The biggest of the controversies.
Yeah, so it's interesting, yeah.
But he's also,
You'd think he'd love the Queen and the family. Aren't they quite famously racist, allegedly?
Allegedly.
Well, at least the Queen's husband, I think, is pretty
The Queen's husband, who is her second cousin.
Hey, what, you got a problem with cousins now?
Yes, fuck cousins.
No, that's what they did and that's what got him into all that trouble in the first place.
That's why Charles looks the way he does, too.
Yeah, well, that's how everyone looks the way they do because their parents boned.
Isn't a science episode,
isn't
Matt.
Isn't it a science episode?
Next we'll be doing maths. God. This is what COVID's done to us.
Anyway, so back to this article that's talking about how Catherine Viner loves this album. From a distance, the Smiths look unlovable, safe, and strangely, considering Morrissey's gladioli, that's a flower he was famously sort of used to wave around on stage, or probably still does, considering Morrissey's gladioli-wielding androgyny, overwhelmingly male. Well, they were none of those things at the time. If you're a teenager in the 80s, perhaps, what were the chances? Misunderstood and alone in a fraying household in a northern city with only books and records to save you, well, You might have fallen for them too. I think she might be talking about herself there.
I think that might be a little bit of a revealing.
Interesting, she says, the album I've chosen is 1985's Meat is Murder. The Smiths' eponymous debut is their most astonishing record. The Queen is Dead is their best, but Meat is Murder is my favourite. Isn't that interesting? The
wow.
Three of the four albums she's called, one's the most astonishing, one is their best, but the other one is her favourite.
That poor fourth one probably feels a bit neglected.
The fourth one was, I think, Johnny Marr left before that. So I don't, I wonder if some people, sort of like The Clash's last album, some people maybe don't see it as a real Smiths album. I don't know that for sure.
Yep.
But she calls Meter's Murder freewheeling, exciting, political, and with Morrissey's words and Marr's music interlacing perfectly. It starts as if in the middle of something. You're already part of this. Meter's Murder is local and British from the first line. Belligerent ghouls run Manchester schools and expresses fury at a kind of school life that has been forgotten. When the album was released, corporal punishment was still illegal. It wasn't banned until the following year, 1986.
Wow.
And everyone had a particularly sadistic teacher like Morrissey's Spineless Swines. Mine was Miss Grant, who had a flat bat on which she had chalked two faces, one happy and one down in the mouth. If the smiling face was showing, the bat would be hitting someone that day.
Oh, holy wow. Shit.
The brilliantly titled Barbarian Begins at Home, during which Morrissey yelps as if in pain, is also about children being hit. A crack on the head is what you get for asking, is a quote from the song.
Wow.
There's a lot of violence in the Smiths. Rush Home Ruffians with Johnny Marr's rockabilly riff is about Manchester too and makes the city home of much of the history of British feminism, socialism, vegetarianism, and The Guardian sound exciting.
Lots of ism.
A place where things happen. Who wouldn't want to be a ruffian from Rush Home? I was from the other side of the Pennines, but pilgrimages to the city because of the Smiths gave me style. Old men's coats from Affleck's place, the secondhand clothes and record emporium that opened in 1982, rare Smiths 12 inches. What difference does it make with Morrissey on the front instead of Terrence Swamp? Photo of the front of Salford Lads Club, chance meetings with Morrissey's ex-girlfriend, artist Linda Sterling, working in Deansgate Waterstones, and just a little bit, a sense of possibility. It's a full record of yearning, the humiliating obviousness of when you want something, low expectations, the melodrama of youth, and romance. And she gives quotes from all the songs. I reckon, I'll read this one last thing. It's also funny. I like to drop my trousers to the Queen, sings Morrissey on Nowhere Fast. Every sensible child will know what this means. The poor and the needy are selfish and greedy on her terms. That's funny stuff.
It's hilarious.
It's hard to hear the song without wondering.
I can see why your ex-girlfriend thought he was so funny.
It's hard to hear the song without wondering if Morrissey is already on only his second album, parodying himself. If the day came when I felt a natural emotion, I'd get such a shock, I'd probably jump in the ocean. There was the line that stood out the most to me on the album was that I'm like, I don't know if this is good or awful. And there's a few lines like that.
Yep.
It was something like, it was getting dark as I drove the point. It was getting dark as I drove the point home.
Yes.
Like, is that good or
I feel
not?
Like,
I'm not sure.
So, firstly, I'm impressed that you were able to understand what he was saying at all, because there's a lot that I'm like, but he's got some, like, pretentiousness wank about him that I just can't help but dislike.
Oh, dislike. I wasn't sure which way you were going to go there.
You know me, love but a pretentious wanker.
That's exactly who, that's all of him, isn't it?
Right.
He's sort of like one of the, like the archetypes of a pretentious wanker, isn't
it? Yeah, he's like, I'm so intelligent. You probably haven't read this book that I've read that I'm now going to discuss with you anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know.
He is the exact type of bloke that would be like, oh, you've never heard of the Smiths? Oh, you must listen to the radio. Like one of those ones.
Yeah, right.
That's the vibe.
Have you dealt with these sort of people?
Yeah.
Should we start going through the tracks? We've done a lot of talking, not a lot of listening.
Not a lot of listening.
Two of these, one of these. Now. Use them in that ratio.
You're the school teachers that he's talking about right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that sounds a bit more patient than just smacking
eyes
them.
Eyes are watching, ears are listening, mouths are closed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So here is the opening track, The Headmaster Ritual.
It does sound, I think in your article, she said it sounds like it starts in the middle of...
Yeah, it just gets
it does.
Right
it's
into
just
it,
like,
it?
Yeah, it's like we've just jumped in halfway, which I don't hate. I like that.
I like the bass throughout this album.
Yeah, it's funky.
One of the employees of the band, as you call
them. The employees. One of the staff members.
You never even mention them. That's our little...
Yeah, I was just flicking through extra notes, and Morrissey and Ma got 40% of the royalties each, while the other two members of the band got 10% each.
Andy Rourke was the bass player for the first three albums, including this one.
Okay.
And on drums was Mike Joyce.
Joyce.
And there was a couple other players briefly...
Yeah, that's just kind of dotted around the starts and the ends.
But it was pretty consistent. I mean, it wasn't a long... And then it looks like Johnny Marr left...
Late 80s,
I think. But, I mean, they broke up in the late 80s, so... Oh, no, Johnny Marr was on the final album. Jeez. It took me too long to correct that one. Sorry, everybody. People would have been furious.
Someone was halfway through a letter to us.
People would have been absolutely furious. I was basing that off a graph that had Johnny Marr being replaced by Iva Perry.
Oh, I love those graphs on Wiki.
Right, yeah, they're very handy, but in this case, it probably sold me a pup.
Wow.
Sorry about that, Smith's diehards.
Dave.
I look forward to the retraction email. All right, so that's probably enough for that one. So that's the opening track. Oh, it was a good, solid track.
Good opener.
Then it was into Rush Home Ruffians. It's a bouncier sort of one.
Bit of reggae.
This is a beachy track again. I feel like English summer.
Yeah, I read in a description of them. It was like 60s. 60s like beach rock mixed with like new wave England.
Right.
I was like, that's pretty. But they were like super anti the synthesizer pop that was in vogue at the time.
Yeah. No. It's got this, even though it's got nice bass lines, it's not a very, like the sound isn't big and bassy.
No.
So it's kind of thin, tinny sound for the most part.
Tinny is a good word.
Which is the kind of 80s production style that I'm not really into.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of many elements of 80s production that I don't like, but...
Tinny, no good.
But it's interesting, like you're saying, I think that would have been quite influential. But it is the opposite of a lot of overproduced 80s music.
They're like, you know what? We don't need someone to do that for us. We'll just slam it together. Is this the one where he's like, no?
Yeah.
This, I will say, we talked about it earlier, I think, maybe before we were recording, but this has been the hardest album to listen to. Because, like, you know, I am comfortable with what I know. So usually if I know a track or two on an album, I'm more likely to enjoy the whole thing, whereas this one...
I think that's pretty standard. That's why singles exist. It's to give people an in to an album.
Yep.
And I think that totally makes sense. It is harder work to get into an album when you've got no obvious in.
Mm.
But I've become more and more used to that as time's gone on, because I'll just dive into albums.
Yep.
But yeah, this one so far has been the hardest one for me to get into. Yeah. It took me quite. I didn't like it the first three or four times I played it, and then I'm like, all of a sudden it just clicked, and I'm like, I kind of like nearly every song on this album all of a sudden.
But
it's weird.
I can't differentiate between the songs.
Okay.
Like, if you played me any song and it was like, where does this fall in the album, or do you know what this one's called? I would say no, because they all sound very similar, except the last one, because it's very slow.
It does slow right down. But I think, I mean, to me, they all sound quite unique, but I do get what you mean as well. I think the style is different on each of them. This one's so different from the first one.
Mm.
Like I said, it's got that bouncier
It's a bit bouncier,
style.
Yeah.
Track three is I Want the One I Can't Have. It's bouncy again.
This sounds very like beachy. Yeah, jangly. That's such a good word for it.
It's a I don't know who was doing it first, but there's a whole Australian scene loves that jangle pop.
Yep.
And I think it goes back to the 80s.
Yep.
But it's There's been like a resurgence over the last 10 years or something. There's a lot of jangly pop bands.
Yeah, I love that.
I do like that sort of guitar sound. I imagine it does feel like it probably was an English thing that influenced the Australian scene, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Beach scenes.
And New Zealand, I think, also had quite a prominent scene in this sort of style. I'm absolutely talking out my arse. These are vague memories of having. But yeah, I like this one too. But like I said, all of a sudden I just kind of liked all the songs.
Yep. And then you get to a point where you can differentiate them so much that you start disliking songs again
because
you're so familiar. That's like that's the general cycle of an album, isn't
it? Yeah. Often the ones that are the hardest to get into, once you do get into them, you love them more than the ones that were easy to get into. It's weird. But there's no huge standouts to me on this album, I don't think. But that one, this is track four, What She Said. Another cool guitar sound. Pretty epic. I'd love to hear this produced a real chunky.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You turned up.
And maybe with a different singer.
I would love to hear it with a different vocalist, like a different style vocalist altogether. Because I think it would just change the whole. I mean, obviously it'll change the sound because it's a literal different sound. But even like genre-wise, I feel like it could change it.
I think just listening to this now again, I reckon this is one of my favorites. I did message Dave, because we've been. This is going to be the next episode for so long.
Yeah.
That I've been listening to it for ages. I messaged Dave a while back, sort of going, I finally think I've gotten into the Smiths.
Was he excited?
He said, I'm glad. I didn't know. Yeah, this isn't one of the ones I mentioned, but I think the next track is one that I said to him at the time that was the standout, which is called That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore. This is the one with the It Was Dark As I Drove the Point Home one. I think it is John. I think Johnny Marr is the guy who makes them great.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's probably a thing in Smith's culture that would be like the Morrissey fans and the Johnny Marr fans.
Yeah. And the other, that each of them blame the other for breaking up the band.
So as the danger when it's a two-headed beast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cracking tune.
The music's so beachy.
Yeah. I never connected with beachiness until you mentioned it, and yeah. Now it's all I can hear.
Yeah. But yeah, Morrissey's vocals just makes it the English beach.
Yeah, but now it's sounding to me like you could hear this in the dry Australian summer as well, even.
Do you reckon?
I'm just picturing this line out in a field somewhere around the dead grass.
Red dirt.
There it is. Track 6 is Nowhere Fast.
Oh, another this bouncy one. Yeah, this one's fun.
There's that funny line about dropping the trousers, was it?
To the queen.
Imagine doing that. Very amusing.
So funny. Morrissey. La-da-dum.
That sort of, that's such a cheesy.
Yeah, that was that line. Down, 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 down.
We got 3 tracks to go. We got Well I Wonder, track 7.
This whole album's only like 40 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, 39. Love that.
Not going to lie, it felt longer when I was listening to it for the first few times. Like, to the point where checking how far into a song it was. Because I'm like, is this?
I think it's because the last 2 tracks are the longest 2 tracks.
Oh.
So it probably feels like it drags late.
And the last song is the slowest one.
That's classic Morrissey. Well, I wonder.
His vibrato is fantastic, though. The wavy voice, as I prefer to call it. What did you call it before? Fluttering your hands in the air?
Flutter your hands in the air like you just don't care.
Like you just don't care. This got like some like real 50s like love pop.
Oh yeah.
Don't you reckon? Like doom da
da doom. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Ding, ding. So then track 8, another one of my favorites, I reckon. Barbarianism Begins at Home.
This one, sick. I thought, is the most 80s sound.
Yeah, totally.
I think there's, like, one thing that I will give to the Smiths on this album is I think a lot of the music is very, like, timeless sounding. Yeah. And maybe because, like, you know, we were talking about overproduction earlier. Maybe because it doesn't have that huge overproduction to it, it kept it more timeless.
I think, yeah, whenever you really dive deep into the trends, you're always going to date yourself badly.
Yep. But yeah, this one was the one that was like most obviously 80s to me, whereas others I reckon you could have slotted elsewhere through time and I wouldn't have questioned it.
Yeah, maybe it's that bass. And I reckon it's the bass line that's making it 80s.
Yeah. A fake whip crack. That's good. Oh, there you go.
Crack, he was underpaid, the bass player.
Yeah, he only got 10%. Yeah, I think it is the bass. Maybe even like the little chug-chug of the guitar. I don't know.
And then it finishes with the title track, Meat is Murder, which the reviewer or the journalist, Catherine Viner, I'll just read this paragraph she says in her article. And then right at the end, the title track, a great political song and the best ever written about animal rights. Even famous vegetarian Paul McCartney, who has written tracks about the British in Northern Ireland, revolutionary politics and 9/11, has never written a song about vegetarianism. He once told me he'd always found it curiously hard to commit one to paper, even though he'd tried, and that he greatly admired the Smiths' effort. Meat is Murder's sinister opening, full of strange noises that conjure up an abattoir, moves into a terrible, beautiful melody. The carcass you carve with a smile, it is murder, and the turkey you festively slice, it is murder. The song made me stop eating meat, and I haven't eaten it since. Holy
wow.
Shit.
Wow.
You go, oh, music doesn't change the world. I guess it...
Fucking...
At least... Yeah, that's amazing.
That's a big effect.
And she finishes her article saying, sometimes I wonder if a love affair with the Smiths is an 80s self-absorbed teenage thing, something you grow out of. Perhaps when the day comes that you'd feel a natural emotion. But those witty, thoughtful lyrics, that beautiful guitar, an album containing the great line, a double bed... and a stalwart lover for sure. These are the riches of the poor. It's a wonderful thing. Anyway, let's hear that powerful political song that made Catherine Viner stop eating meat. Meat is Murder. Does that really bring to mind an abattoir?
The only noise that I did think was funny was the cows mooing, and now that actually does make a lot of sense why it's there. Did not connect the dots. Such an idiot.
What do cows have to do with meat?
They're different, right? It's actually reminded me, my best roommate Megan grew up in a tiny, tiny town north of Albury called Burrumbuddock, and over the fence, over her back fence was a farm that had cows on it, and she had this recurring nightmare of a cow that had a whole bunch of balloons tied to its tail that would just like float up in front of her and kick her in the face. Like, recurring nightmare. So every time I hear cows mooing, I'm like, must have been sleeping in Burrumbuddock times.
I don't think that wasn't a nightmare, that was a message.
Stop eating me. Right in the kisser.
It's a good, minute 50 before the vocals kick in.
Yeah.
Get in touch if listening to this now makes you stop eating meat forever.
Keep us posted.
It's powerful. It's a gloomy tune, which makes sense. It's a gloomy topic, but I don't mind it. I don't mind it. Yeah, so that's the album. That's Meat is Murder. 9 tracks, 39 minutes.
Not bad.
What do you reckon?
How do you rate 80?
Have you collated all my other ratings? I need you to do that before, because I'm flying blind here. These are all such made up numbers.
They are.
I need to see.
This was your marking system.
With the system. If you start showing us what
you haven't put anything less than 40%, 40 out of 80, I should say.
Right. Oh no, I haven't even gone near that. I don't think.
No.
I think the lowest thing we've given anything was you giving something 40.
Yeah, what was that? I was just a bit meh about it.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Might have been Nin. Was it Nin?
It might have been Nin.
Oh, it might have been Dire Straits, actually.
Yeah.
Because I do not particularly enjoy their tunage.
Yeah. I think I'd give this, I'd enjoyed it. Like I said, I didn't enjoy it for a little while. And then
yeah.
Now I'm happy to listen to it, but it's still overall, even though it sounds beachy in that to you, and maybe it does a bit to me now as well, but still to me is a bit of a bummer of an album.
It is. I don't feel up and about after it, and that's usually when I'm listening to music. I like to feel good emotions.
Yeah, right. I guess it's what, like, there's an album for all emotions and times and feelings. But yeah, so I'd say I for what it is, I quite like it, and I'd say absolutely plucking a number out of thin air. I don't know why I'm putting the pressure on you to collate the numbers. I'm not going to go back and listen to old episodes. Can you?
Oh, I'll skip through them to find the bit.
So I think I'm going to say the number that's coming to my mind is 63.
73.
63. I don't know why that is, but
63, good number. Two numbers in a line. Had you asked me at the very start, like after I'd given it a couple of listens, I would have said it's trash 20.
Yeah.
But I listened to it enough that I did enjoy it in some sick way. And I definitely liked it more than the 40 I gave Dire Straits. So I'm going to give it a 45.
45.
Also, 45 is 45. A nice number. It just rolls off your tongue, don't you reckon?
It's a good, that's a good number.
Did you just lose your voice?
It's a musical number.
45.
Yeah. Finally, my balls are dropping.
Congratulations.
Oh, hello. Oh, thank God. Sick of talking with that high-pitched voice.
Speaking of balls, though.
Listen now.
Listen now. Speaking of balls. I'll give you my fun fact for the Smiths.
Yeah, great.
They broke up in the late 80s and have never got back together since, despite being offered $5 million for an album, $75 million for a 50-date tour. And Morrissey in 2006 declared, "I would rather eat my own testicles than reform the Smiths." And that's saying something for a vegetarian. That's a fun fact.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have even considered eating your own testicles as breaking vegetarianism. But yeah, I guess
self cannibalizing. Does that? I mean, if you ate someone else's testicles, does that count as eating meat? But if it's your own meat,
Morrissey, buddy, it's your own meat. Have at it.
Your own meat is your own murder, my bro.
Hey, and if you just live through it, it's not murder.
True.
So
it's just an unfortunate event that has happened in your
balls
own life.
Aren't creating too much life at this stage. So just if that's you subtly asking for our permission,
you
have at it.
Do you, buddy?
That is a very fun
also,
fact.
Also, someone has characterized him as the Pope of Mope, and that is fantastic.
That's great. Moz, the Pope of Mope.
He kind of looks like Joaquin Phoenix now.
Yeah, right.
Do you reckon?
Cop that, Joaquin. Yeah. The only thing we've got left to do is the letters bag. Any letters to Alan this week?
We got a letter.
Or this last couple month or whatever it's been?
We got one 2 weeks after our last episode, which is about 18 years ago, from our mate Herbert Covington, who I believe is
the detective,
a solid do-go-oner. Do-go-on is Matt's other podcast, one of. Check him out on all the socials. Hey, Matt and Sam, it's been so good to hear you guys chat about music again. Sorry that you had to wait another, month since you wrote this. Sorry, Herbert. Sorry, detective. I know the episodes have been hard to churn out with the virus and all, so I really appreciate y'all's hard work in bringing your hilarious podcast as well as introducing us to new music across the world. So far, my
fresh
favorite
new music from 1985.
The 80s have just got to Melbourne. So far, my favorite ep has been Huey Lewis, your mate.
Nice. The third. Hugh Clegg.
Huey Craig the third. This was surprising because my retail job ruined Huey by shoving singles down my throat. So when I saw the first app was on him, I thought, well, I'll enjoy the episode, but I probably won't listen to the album. But in typical fashion, you guys swayed me, and now I can't stop bumping, walking on a thin line.
That's something about him. I don't know.
He's a damn catchy bastard. He'd appreciate it since he got ragged on so much. Can't wait to listen now again. Thanks, the detective. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
And thanks to all the lovely comments this week who were saying that they were excited to know that we're back in the studio after our accidental hiatus. Made me feel really good about it. Sorry, y'all, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. And I think to streamline things now, we're going to have, rather than the email address, don't worry about that anymore. Just, I mean, if you email there, I'm sure Sam will still check it. But there's a link to a little form to fill out now, which will just make it easier for us to track the messages. So if you've got any comments about anything at all, really, if you just want to tell us your favorite album of the 80s or favorite album of all time or anything.
Any cool stories from concerts?
Yeah, or any comments on albums we've been going through so far in the 80s?
We're just happy for a chat.
Just click on the link in the show notes and Sam will read that out on a future episode. But yeah, that's pretty much all we've got time for today here at Listen Now. So that leaves us with nothing else to say except for goodbye, Astrid.
Goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Okay, so you've stayed to the very end, which means you want to know what next week's episode is going to be about. And like I said, I'll just give you the first lyrics of the album. And they are, "See the sound, it crashes in, all around, it gets in. Now take your hands and raise them up into the air. That's all around you. Now bring them down like a clock at 2. Shake your head. You know what to do. They want to put guns in the sky. Someone out there ain't going to like it." See you then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.